To be honest, part of me wonders whether we need a talk this morning, because I'm talking about hope this morning. Hope in kind of hope based on events that happened in the past, the coming of Jesus. Hope based on events that we believe are going to happen in the future, the return of Jesus. But ultimately, hope that makes a difference in our lives now. And actually, I kind of think we've been hearing just something about how hope makes a difference in our lives now, all the way through what we've done this morning. This Advent, we're picking up on these themes of love, hope, peace, and joy. But we wanted to give them a contemporary twist. You know, how does it make a difference in our lives now? And so today it's hope. And we want to, just like we challenged you last week, to think about how can I share love with people? We want to be challenging you this week, as you go into this week. Are there things you can do or say that would bring hope to people in the week ahead? And let's just kind of look for those opportunities and ask God to give us those opportunities. But I guess I've got a question to begin with. Can we have the next slide? Thank you. And it's really hope or hopelessness. It feels at the moment we live at a time kind of when actually those kind of things we're talking about, love, hope, joy, peace, kind of they're in short supply. Our world at times feels to be more characterized by hopelessness than hope. Just kind of picking out a few things at random internationally. The ethnic cleansing in Myanmar, the civil war in Yemen. You know, the impact of ISIS, even though they've been driven out of Iraq and they've kind of said their control has now been completely ended in Iraq. They're being driven out of Syria. And yet that doesn't mean to say that the problem and the threat has disappeared. It's just become more unpredictable. You know, you could pick up things almost on every continent in the world, kind of where there is brokenness and hopelessness. Coming closer to home, in our own country, we still live with uncertainty and anxiety over Brexit. Our own nation feels increasingly divided, just as the rest of the world is divided. The gulf between those that are comfortable and well off and those that are facing genuine deprivation seems to get wider and wider. More and more lives are touched by the blight of homelessness, and Hannah's already touched on that, and I'm going to come back to that again in a moment. The proposed changes to kind of credit with the bringing in of universal credit, it feels like it hangs as a dark cloud over many people's lives. So it seems like for many people, what little hope they have could all too easily be extinguished. And so we ask the question, is there hope that can make a real difference in people's lives now when our world seems to be sinking into a mire of hopelessness? And so just to turn to that passage, just those few verses that Giles read for us from Jeremiah. We're picking up on some of the prophecies, kind of as we look at these subjects, about the coming of Jesus. Jeremiah writes at a time of absolute hopelessness. He's like he is the most miserable of the prophets. Yeah, we talk about people being a bit of a Jeremiah because they're kind of a miserable sort of character. He had reason to be miserable. Kind of it's like everything was kind of building up and building up. And kind of disaster was hanging over them. And that disaster was coming from God's judgment. The northern kingdom already got into exile. The part of God's people he lived in, Judah, was about to go into exile. It was like the darkest hour. And yet he still points to hope. And at the heart of that hope is the fact that God keeps his promises. He says, "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will fulfill the gracious promise I made to the house of Israel and to the house of Judah." God keeps his promises despite all the evidence To the contrary, Jeremiah still holds on to the fact that God is faithful and will keep those promises. Now, I'm really panicking about my time. I panicked when I opened up the Bible to prepare this, because I knew that I couldn't kind of have this passage read with all the reference to God's blessing on Israel and Judah and not make any reference to what's been happening this past week. Kind of, I never dreamt that kind of Trump would be recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel today. And kind of that has implications for kind of what we're looking at today. So I'm just going to take a slight detour into that. It's not what I really want to talk about. I can't go into it in detail, but kind of it would be wrong not to mention it at all. It's also helpful because it brings out, I think, some of the ambiguity about hope. You see, sometimes what brings hope to one person can actually bring hopelessness to another person. And there's a bit of a paradox in that too, isn't there? You know, we kind of think if something's good, it's going to bring hope to everyone. Or if something's bad, it's going to bring hopelessness to everyone. Well, actually, there's really very different reactions to what's happened with Trump recognizing Jerusalem at this time. For the Israeli, Trump's announcement is the culmination of years of hoping. They've wanted to have Jerusalem recognized as their capital almost since the re-establishment of the Jewish state. But for the Palestinian who's been living in that land for generations, it steals away what little hope they have. Their hope of a homeland now seems even more fragile because of kind of Trump's actions. So for one, it brings hope, and for the other, it brings hopelessness. And this is one of those issues that's quite divisive amongst Christians. If we were to do a straw poll here, I suspect we would have very differing views about kind of the significance of this and whether this is a good thing, kind of, or a bad thing. For those Christians that are looking for a physical re-establishment of the nation of Israel as kind of part of God's purposes for the future of this world, kind of, a lot of them are going, saying, yay, that's great. It's moving in the right direction. But not every Christian, and I include myself in that, is kind of convinced, by those arguments that is necessarily what's necessary for God's plans to be fulfilled. Paul talks in Romans about Jewish people coming to faith, and I really question whether that's dependent on a nation or on Christ. And for me, it's about Christ. Not about the physical renewal of a nation. And so it's divisive. And sadly, the Christian voice that's frequently overlooked is the voice of those Christians that have lived in the land since the time of Christ. And Suzanne a moment ago kind of mentioned that they were in a Christian hospital in Nazareth, but now it's in a largely kind of Muslim area. And there's a reason for that, that actually Christians have been leaving Palestine but over the generations in increasing numbers because it's become such a difficult place to live. So the people that were the original followers of Jesus that have lived in that land, they're just as oppressed as Muslim Palestinians are. Their homes are just as likely to be taken away from them as their Muslim neighbours' lands and homes are liable to be annexed. And so kind of what's happening in with Jerusalem at the moment, with Trump's actions, is incredibly divisive. For some, it brings hope, and for others, it increases hopelessness. And it seems to me that the hope this passage holds for the peace of Jerusalem is not about a nation, but it's about a person. It's about a root that will rise up from David's line. And if you could have the next slide, thank you. Jeremiah echoes one of the classic carol service readings we have every year. Isaiah's prophecy about the coming of Jesus being like a shoot coming from the stump of Jesse, from kind of David the king's line. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots a branch will bear fruit. the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. And kind of Isaiah is looking towards the coming of Jesus and looking towards the reestablishment of the lines of the kings of Jesus, not in a military ruler, but in one that will come and lead by serving and by giving his life for all. And so in our reading, can we have the next slide? Thanks. Jeremiah foresees a branch that will grow out of the roots of a tree that's been cut down. Not my picture, I found it on the internet. And the tree that's been cut down is the nation of Israel. It's like God's judgment on it is kind of irrevocable. They're going to go into exile. Yes, they'll return, but they will never have autonomy as a nation again until literally last century. And they will be ruled by the Persians, by the Greeks, by the Romans. And they will lose their kind of independence, their political autonomy. And it will also mark the end of the line of David, the kings that have ruled over them. And it's like the tree's been cut off and there's no hope. But Jeremiah and Isaiah see hope. They see a shoot growing from that stump. And that's the hope that they see. And it's kind of a prophecy of the coming of Jesus and how he will rule on the throne of David forever. It's all about kind of him coming at Christmas, which we celebrate, and him returning, which we look for now. So it takes us back to hope, this hope of what kind of God has done and what God will do. The Oxford Dictionary describes hope as a feeling of expectation and desire for a particular thing to happen, a feeling of trust. But for Christians, hope is intrinsically bound up with faith. Now, faith is being certain of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Hope is not wishful thinking. It's something tangible. It's based on God's promises. And our hope is in a person. The shoot or the branch that comes from David's line, from the root of Jesse. Jeremiah's anticipating the coming of Jesus and how Jesus will take on the reign of David's family. And so kind of it's like they're telescoping the coming of Jesus and the return of Jesus. They're looking forward to his birth and they're looking forward to what's going to happen. And when we look to kind of what it talks about, kind of Jerusalem and Judah being blessed, did that happen with the birth of Jesus? No. But will it happen with the return of Jesus? Yes. So what does this hope look like? Kind of through the ages, Christians have overcome the most difficult trials because they had hope. Hope based on what Jesus has done and what God is going to do, but hope that makes a difference now. Hope isn't just about clinging on to the events of the past or holding on in desperation for a future. It's about something that's meant to make a difference in our lives here and now. And you may have guessed, I've been trying to go through this like the clappers a bit this morning. I just really want to finish with two stories. The one is a bit of church history. If you don't do history, just try and bear with me and kind of not switch off just for a moment. And the other is much more kind of contemporary. And we're going to have a little bit of a video clip that opens that up to us. We live in a Christian country. And we live in a Christian country because, but I guess it's partly about God's timing. That Christ came in the midst of the Roman Empire where there was communication and there were roads and it was possible for kind of the gospel to reach this country. Essentially, it came here from Rome. It was first established in Canterbury and it kind of made its way north. Well, that's one strand. The gospel also went to Ireland and kind of it bore fruit there. And people from Ireland kind of took the gospel to the north. And they came south. So in this country, when people started to hear the gospel, it was like a pincer movement. Kind of Roman missionaries that came to the south of England and Celtic missionaries that came to the north of England. And somewhere they met in the middle, and between them, they kind of managed to evangelize this nation. But there were a few kind of confusions, kind of because the Celtic Christianity had a much more sense of kind of a mystic spirituality about it. The Roman Christianity had a much more sense of legalism and order about it. They weren't necessarily happy bedfellows. It took a few synods to kind of get the two to agree. Does it sound like church today? Possibly, I don't know. But eventually they did, and there was a fusion of the two that kind of is at the roots of all of our Christian culture in this nation. I've got 5-10 more minutes to go. Can someone just let the kids in? It's not fair they sit out there all that time. Sorry, I knew I was going to be, well, and I'm not going to be necessarily long, but come on in, guys. Come and be comfortable. The problem was that while this country was receiving the gospel, kind of Europe, where it came from, was becoming pagan again. During that period, the Roman Empire fell, and order, which is why we call it the Dark Ages, kind of just ebbed away in Europe. And so there was a need to take the gospel back to Europe. And somehow an obscure monk was lifted off of a beach on the Isle of Wight, in Ventnor to be precise, where he had been kind of telling fishermen about Jesus, and he was given the job of going back to Europe and telling people about Jesus all over again. Anyone know who I'm talking about? Anyone got a name there? His name was, you know, his name was Boniface. That's why it's called Boniface Down on the Isle of Wight over Ventnor, if any of you have been there. Really nice little chapel that kind of remembers him there. Well worth a visit if you're ever in Ventnor. But Boniface went back to Europe with the gospel. You're ahead of me, but you can leave it up. I'll let you. Okay? And I just want to tell you one very quick story about Boniface. On one occasion, he came upon a village where they were about to sacrifice a child in a pagan sacrifice. And they were going to do it at an oak tree. And Boniface kind of protested against this and told them about Jesus and said there was no need to kill children because God had sent his son to die for us. And Boniface cut down the oak tree to take away the place of sacrifice. And reputedly, and I have to say this might be a bit stringy, reputedly at the base of the oak tree, there was a small fir tree. And he gave them the fir tree as a symbol of the tree on which Jesus died and as a reminder of the new life. Now, that's meant to be the roots of kind of why we have Christmas trees. It's also why it came from Germany with Prince Albert, because that was in Saxony, in Germany, that took place. Now, I just really want to ask the question, does that ring any bells? A fir tree at the base of a tree, a reminder of life, kind of where there was death. And Jeremiah prophesies about a tree being cut down, the end of an old order, but the coming of a new order, a new life and a new way of doing things. So that's one story. Next one's briefer, but there's a video that goes with it. It's about a guy called Josh Coombs. Anyone heard of Josh Coombs? Oh, dear me. What do you watch? What do you listen to? I have to confess, I first came across Josh Coombs on a photography podcast. And he's kind of set up a thing, hashtag do something for nothing. He's a hairdresser. I said, I'll come back to homelessness. And a bit like Hannah, kind of he works in London. And was incredibly troubled by the level of homelessness he saw in London and wanted to do something about it. And we're all wired differently. He didn't want to give money. He didn't want to give money to a charity that would do it for him. He wanted to do something physical himself. And so he took the step of going out on the streets with his scissors and his hairdressing things. And when he found people homeless on the streets, he would stop and wash their hair and cut their hair and trim their beards and try and restore their dignity. It was his way of showing compassion to people that were hurting and doing something physical himself. And I think giving them back hope. And he's not, you know, to my knowledge, he's not a Christian. It's something he did out of his humanity. And it's kind of awoken a movement. He's kind of worked with photographers to publicise what he does so others will do it. Let's just have a little look at that video clip. Is that okay, Brian? Thank you.
To bring together so many people with the only objective being to spread love and compassion, it was an amazing achievement. It's such a humble concept, giving up some of your time to help somebody else, but it really works. And in my experience, you never know when your influence is going to change somebody's day for the good and change their thought process completely. I could almost feel the humanity echoing around us, knowing that there was different people in different parts of London, all doing something for nothing in their own way. It's a feeling I won't forget. Because time is the most precious gift we all have, and it's something that will never go unappreciated by the people you give it to. Do Something for Nothing is about addressing the compassion we all have within ourselves. That's our ethos, and I think everybody involved that day really felt that. Hairdressing is how I communicate with people, but this is about so much more than that. Anybody, no matter who you are, can do something for nothing and make a difference in your own way. And I have to say, for me, the feeling I get when I see the smiles of the men and women I meet and I see the look in their eyes, it's unrivaled to anything else I've felt before in my life. Whatever you give to somebody, whether it be a cup of coffee, buying somebody some flowers, or even just sitting down and having a conversation, remember this small thing. It makes a big difference. The cool thing is, this can be our response to some of the world's problems right now. When something bad happens, we can hit the streets and you can show somebody that you care. Your voice, your hands, your smile, they're one step away from restoring somebody's faith in humanity. This is a call to action. Share your own moments. Let's push on from here.
Thank you, Brian. I just love that line in there where he talked about doing something for nothing can be our response to kind of the stuff that's happening in the world. And, you know, when we look at the big stuff, when we're kind of confronted by what seems like hopelessness, it can evoke powerlessness in us. Yet that can be turned round simply by offering hope to others. Kind of what they were doing on that kind of day, which kind of, it started with him cutting hair to other people catching the idea and people using the skills they had to do simple things and then kind of turning it into a day event. But it's not just a day event, it's trying to be a lifestyle. I mean, we did a similar thing here last year with Love High Brooms. It's about showing love in a tangible way. And that can be something you do on a day, or it can be something that we do every day of our lives, just looking for simple opportunities to do something for nothing, to offer care and hope to someone. And when we treat someone who is broken and hurting with dignity, it evokes hope in their lives. You see, the thing about hope is, if God's poured his hope into our lives, we should be in the business of pouring hope into other people's lives. And we're beginning all of these talks this term with just a time to stop and think. And we're going to do that now. We're going to have another video, which is just really for contemplation, for you to think. And I just challenge you, how can you offer hope to someone else this week?